It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It was August 11th of 2011, a typical summer evening in Iowa, when Caroline Found lost her life. Just 2 weeks later, her mother lost her battle with pancreatic cancer. These tragedies set off a remarkable series of events and left a loving and inspiring legacy for the people who knew and loved the Founds and for those who were touched by their story. Millions of people were touched by their story. Bill Hoft has written about this time in the new book, Live Like Line, Love Like Ellen, and he is here with me now. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I don't want to get into the details of Caroline's death. That's something that a lot of people read about in Iowa City in news reports. She was in a moped accident. She died instantly at the scene after her crash. But let's talk about the night that followed, because news in the West High community, where Caroline was an incoming senior, news traveled very fast that night. Of course, pretty much every teenager has a cell phone. And once people started hearing about what had happened, the texts went quickly from one student to another. The phone calls went quickly from one student to another. And also Caroline's volleyball coach got a phone call that night, and Caroline was a very important member of that team. Tell me a little bit about what was going on in the West High community that night.
It was chaos. You're right. Social media in that regard, people were texting and, you know, phoning, and it was really bedlam for the West High community, and particularly the volleyball team. The family, everyone was trying to find out what happened. And then when they did, just shock and sadness. And it actually ended up the staging area, so to speak, was Kelly Fleeler's house, who was a teammate of Caroline. And her house was filled up all night long with folks coming and going and sadness and crying and, you know, all of it. So there was not much sleep had, but they did notify the coach, and then she had her own set of circumstances to deal with, because the following morning she had scheduled a practice with the team.
She decided not to cancel that practice.
Right.
And what was that like?
That was it was a very, very difficult decision. As a matter of fact, she had discussions with her friend and actual some would say, she might even say, mentor at one point when he was a coach, the principal at Xavier, Tom Kading, and had a conversation about what she should do and what direction she should go, and should she, you know, do they need to play the season? Do they need to, you know, maybe delay the season? And he advised her, absolutely not. You have to get them back on. You have to get them moving forward. And that's going to be very, very difficult.
The season before, I think we need to mention,
sure,
they had won the state championship,
yes,
in 2010. Caroline had been a very important part of that team as a junior. So expectations were extraordinarily high for the volleyball
100%.
Team coming into this season. And it strikes me, as we talk about the remarkable way that people in Iowa City and in the West High community grieved in the coming weeks, it strikes me that that first volleyball practice, which turned into a team meeting,
right,
not a practice,
right,
really set the stage for what would come next.
Correct. It turned into a she decided it would probably be a meeting, not a practice, after obviously no one had slept. Two of the senior leaders came in, Kelly and Shelley Stump were first in, and they were just, you know, they just collapsed in her arms in her office. So she had decided, I think pretty early on, that it was going to be a meeting. But what they didn't expect was, when they rounded the corner to go to their meeting and expected to be there with the team and the coaches, there were about 300 West High kids, other kids from other school. I mean, people came and they wanted to be a share with the volleyball team and wanted to I don't even know that they could really articulate why they came, but they were there. And so it turned into be really a big meeting. And Coach Brez invited everyone to come and sit on the gym floor, and they just spoke, and she spoke about Caroline, and she had them write letters to the Found family and to Caroline. And it was a very special special moment. And it really did set things off. It let let the volleyball team, let the coach know that they weren't going to be alone. They were going to have a lot of support here.
With that initial outpouring of grief, it became pretty evident to the Found family that they were not alone in grieving Caroline's loss. And when they were looking for a place to have a visitation for Caroline, they actually turned to the school, which is very unusual.
Yes. As a matter of fact, it was a bit trailbreaking, actually. And the principal, Jerry Augenbright at the time, who has since retired, but he had a decision to make because he didn't want to set a precedent that, I mean, this is a place of education. It's not a place for, you know, funerals or so. But after a little reflection about the Founds and how important they were to not only the volleyball team but the school, I mean, Ellen was a consummate volunteer. She was there. You know, he would call and have but to ask, and if she was going to be in town, she would be there. And Ernie was the same way, and they would have people out to their farm. And so they were a huge part of West High and the volleyball team. So he felt very compelled because of the family and the relationship to have the visit to Caroline's visitation there. And it's a good thing because the estimates were about 3,000 people showed up.
You mentioned Ellen being a very important part of the school community. And I mentioned that she lost her battle with pancreatic cancer just 2 weeks after Caroline's death. So this was something that the family knew was coming. And Ellen, at the time of Caroline's death, Ellen was basically in hospice care. I mean, they were waiting for the end. This tragedy striking at that time, I mean, that's almost unimaginable to think about trying to deal with. How did Ellen and Ernie, Caroline's father, how did they react together to what was going on?
You mean with regard to Caroline passing? Well, the reaction was, I mean, you're right. Ellen was in 24-hour care at the University Hospital, and she was and, you know, the thing about that is, if I could just step aside for a second, is the people that were close, this is why it was so shocking and just heart-wrenching, is the people that were close to the Founds had been trying to be there for Caroline and prepare Caroline for her mother's passing. I mean, it was inevitable at that point. So when the call came in that it was, that's what made it even more right. Shocking and disturbing.
So everybody was
and saddened
waiting for
was
a call.
People had to be convinced that it wasn't Ellen, it was Caroline. So, but Ernie and Ellen, they were able to share some a very intimate moment at the hospital with Caroline, and be able to say goodbye in their own way. The pastor of the church, St. Andrew, came in. Pastor and associate pastor were there, and they were able to share and pray just had a moment to be able to say goodbye because they, I mean, obviously, Ellen, there was no way Ellen was going to be able to leave the hospital. They wanted to do that because there were a lot of concerns that Ellen would not make the funeral. She was that sick at the times.
She did make the funeral.
Yeah, miraculously. I mean, it really was. And even the pastor who doesn't, he says, I don't like to throw around the word miracle, but it really was miraculous that she was able to be there. And it's a pretty inspirational moment when she's there. That's when she was in hospice and they didn't want her to go and she was going to go. And, you know, so it was quite inspirational for a lot of people. Still is to me when I think about it.
In the weeks that followed, I mean, so often when a family loses someone, and in this case, two someones, they take their grief behind closed doors. This is a private time for a lot of people. But so many people were grieving Caroline and Ellen, and so many people were expressing their feelings. Dr. Ernie Found, really embraced that in a very public way. And I think that was kind of a surprising move. Some people thinking, oh, I don't think this is good for him. I don't think this is good for anyone. But as the volleyball season started, he went to every game and people really embraced him. Tell me a little bit about how this became sort of a phenomenon.
It did. And You know, I don't want to go as far as to say he was on a mission. I think that's overstating. I think what he was doing was that was his way of honoring Caroline and Ellen, was to get out there. And every invitation he received, everyone wanted to memorialize them in some way in certain events, West High events. He was there. The volleyball team, they had this symbiotic relationship where he was propping them up and supporting them, and they were supporting him. It was really beautiful, but he would not refuse an event, and he took time off of work and he would be there. And yeah, people were concerned. I mean, one of his best friends said, you're right, exactly what you said. Most people would be inside and kind of close off a little bit and try to, you know, come to grips with it privately, but he did it very publicly, and there were several people that were concerned that he was not well, or he was taking on too much, and the grief was just always there. But he pressed forward. He felt it very important to honor his family in that way.
Well, and we're going to have to take a short break, but I want to talk about how Caroline's personality was and is remembered by those who love her, and how that became a real inspiration for Ernie and for the entire community and people beyond the community. We will get to that in a moment. I'm talking with Bill Hoft. He has written the new book, Live Like Line, Love Like Ellen, remembering the year 2011. In August of 2011, Caroline lost her life in a moped accident. Just 2 weeks later, her mother, Ellen, lost her battle with pancreatic cancer. Also coming up in a few minutes, I'll talk with Leah Murray, who was a very close friend of Caroline Found's. I'll talk with Leah about how she is carrying on her friend's legacy today. And then later on in the hour, I'll talk with Cheryl Wudun. She's a journalist and a business executive. She, along with her husband, journalist Nicholas Kristof, are working to shine a light on what they have identified as the central moral challenge of this century, the oppression of women and girls around the world. That's coming up a little bit later. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest is Bill Hoft. He's written the new book, Live Like Line, Love Like Ellen, about the Found family. Caroline Found lost her life in a moped accident in August of 2011. Just 2 weeks later, her mother, Ellen Found, succumbed to pancreatic cancer. And the entire Iowa City community and people beyond really rallied around the family. And Bill, I want to talk about Caroline. Again, she was an incoming senior at West High. She was a great volleyball player. She'd been part of this championship team the year before. She was a very well-liked, popular girl, very bubbly, a lot of energy, very beautiful. But she was really and of course all girls are very special, but she had a very special way of really reaching out to people. Tell me, you didn't know her well.
No.
So tell me in all of the interviews that you've done, tell me what you found it was that made Caroline so unique.
It became apparent with the first interview. I mean, and each after there were always these amazing stories about this kid. And she was described as best friend. You know, she had so many best friends. Well, you can only have one best friend, really, and she only knew who that was. But other people described her as their best friend. It did not matter to her. She was excited at the prospect every day waking up of who she might get to meet that day. Now, what a great philosophy to have. She never met a stranger. If there was it did not matter your mental capacity. It didn't matter socioeconomics. None of that mattered to her. If someone needed a friend, she was going to be that friend for that individual. She would reach out to people all the time, grab them in, bring them into her fold, and not only be friends with them, but have her friends be their friends as well. So she was fun. She would do things like take people on rides in her car and honk and wave to strangers. Just, you know, just turn the music up and have a great time. Loved to take people out to her house. She knew she was an amalgam of her dad, who's very adventurous and fun. Both her parents are fun and great to be around. But her dad was the adventurer and fun. Her mom was very giving of herself. She was very much like that. So she was a great combination of the two. People just loved being around her. She would blow in like a westerly storm, summer storm, and just have so much fun. And then there she'd go again, and then she'd come back around later. Just a great person, caring. One of my favorite stories about her was she got in a spot of trouble at school, and usually that was related to trying to help someone else. She got in a little trouble, got a detention after school. This is the only one she ever had, I believe. And then she recognized some kids in there that she knew to be have very very rough economic times, and knew that their only meal would come a lot of times at school. So she got on her cell phone in detention and, unbeknownst to the proctor, ordered a pizza, a large pizza. And when it arrived, he was initially upset. And then she explained to him the reasoning behind it, and everybody enjoyed pizza, and they just had a great time in detention. So that's the type of person she was. She's just a beautiful, beautiful, caring, loving, fun individual.
So as she was being remembered by people at West High, there came this line, live like Line.
Right.
Line was her nickname,
for
Caroline.
Right.
And it became something that was printed on T-shirts, thousands and thousands of T-shirts.
Yes.
They sold like wildfire, and no one was making money off of this. This is just an act to,
right,
give people comfort and a way to be together. Do you know? You've done so many interviews. Where did Live Like Line come from?
I wish I did, and I have asked people close to it. I asked Maddie Vernon, who her father owns a local print shop, and he actually told her, yeah, I'll do the T-shirts for you, just the cost, and then everything else goes into the foundation. So that's where the nonprofit came from. But I asked her. I said, okay, this Genesis, you're as close to the beginning as I can find here. Where did this come from? She said, I have no idea. I saw it on social media. I thought it was a neat saying. I designed the shirt around the saying, and it just took off. I have no idea. If anybody's out there listening and they can tell me where this came, I would love to find out where it came from. It just appeared out of thin air, it seems.
And
it
became a philosophy, a way of living for students all over West High and people everywhere. There,
right,
there is still a Spirit Award given at West High,
right,
in Caroline's name. And at volleyball games, the announcer would ask people to live like Line, introduce yourself to someone you don't,
correct,
know here in the crowd, reach out to others. And so there was so much warmth and so much community,
yes,
that came in this grieving process. The volleyball team also took a great deal of strength from her memory, and they did win that next championship.
They did.
In the final picture, they held up her jersey and,
yes,
and a picture of Caroline.
Yes.
And this story touched so many people all over. ESPN came calling and did an episode, HBO did an episode of Real Sports with,
right,
Bryant Gumbel. And why do you think this story traveled so far? What is it about it?
I think it's the same thing as when people would ask me, well, who's this story for? Who would be your readers? And I said, well, anyone who has lost someone close to them. And the sadness, and I've had it. Other people have had it. You may have had it. It's tough to deal with, depending on who that individual is. Well, here are two people that meant so much to the community and the school and the volleyball team and their family, and they were gone in the blink of an eye, and people were having to come to grips with that. So that's why Live Like Line was so important, because we're going to live. We're going to move forward. We're going to honor them. You can't get around your grief. You can't get over it. You can't get under it. But you can move forward, and you can honor the people that you've lost. And that's what was so special about not only the saying, but the story in general. I think that's what people really connected with. And the volleyball team, the relationship with Ernie and them being able to, not overcome it, but to move forward and to continue to push forward and play, with her. The coach didn't want them to play for her, but they wanted to play and know that she was with them all the time. And they several of them told me we could feel it. We could feel her there.
Well, so often grief takes our strength from us. And in this case, so many people found strength in this story. It inspired so much and continues to inspire. Is that what attracted you to this story?
Yeah, initially I was not attracted to it at all. I don't handle death well, but I think the overarching theme is that good things came from something so tragic. That literally Ernie Found gave me that theme for the book. Our first conversation we had about whether or not we would like to create a book about his family and about that particular season. But that's what attracted me to it was the silver lining that came from, like you said, the strength that came from it and the support and the love and the honor. That's what's attracted me.
Well, Bill Hoft, thank you so much for being here with me
today.
Thank
you. I appreciate it.
Bill Hoft is the author of Live Like Line, Love Like Ellen. He will be speaking and reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore on October 27th at 7 p.m. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Leah Murray was a close friend of Caroline Found's. After Caroline's death, Leah and a few other friends got together to start a campaign they called Hope for a Helmet to pass a law in Iowa that would require minors who are riding mopeds to wear helmets. Iowa is one of three states in the nation that doesn't have a helmet law at all, even a partial helmet law. The campaign has not yet succeeded, but Leah and her friends have not given up hope. And Leah is on the line with me today from Holland, Michigan, where she attends Hope College. Hello, Leah.
Hello, Charity.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And I want to go back to when this idea came about. What made you want to start a campaign for a helmet law, even a partial helmet law, in the state of Iowa?
Well, after the death of Caroline Found, who was one of my best friends, I needed a way to deal with the grief. And I was actually approached by one of my best friends, Olivia Lofgren, and she had been talking to one of her neighbors, Joe Moreland, who's a lawyer in Iowa City, and he proposed a helmet law for Iowa to us. And initially, we weren't too sure about this. I mean, we were only seniors in high school, and we had just gone through a lot with the death of Caroline, but we did a little research into it anyways, and we were really appalled, honestly, to find out that Iowa didn't have any form of helmet law and the consequences that it had in our state and the positive effects that that a helmet law had on other states in the nation.
I know that in the news reports that were published at the time, there were many different stories that said even had Caroline been wearing a helmet, that it probably would not have saved her life. But as you did research, you were convinced that this is something that may not have saved your friend, but could save lives?
Correct. Ever since trying to pass this helmet law, I've paid a lot more attention to the news articles about crashes regarding mopeds and motorcycles just in the state of Iowa, and I've noticed how many people aren't wearing helmets, and it's really sad, honestly, that a lot of these people's lives could have been saved had they been wearing helmets. So even though it may not have affected Caroline, if she would have been wearing a helmet or not, I know it could have affected other people in our state.
When you started campaigning for a helmet law, you set your sights fairly narrow, a helmet law that would be required for minors who are riding mopeds. Why did you decide to campaign for such a narrow helmet law?
Obviously, I guess this is specifically what affected Caroline, in that she was riding moped and under the age of 18, but also only focusing on minors. We decided to pursue that because they're our future, and we need to keep their heads safe because their brains are still developing. And if you get in the habit of wearing helmets while you're young, that'll hopefully transfer to when you're older. And we don't want to control what every adult does. They can make their own decisions. And not that minors can't make their own decisions, but we encourage them to get into that habit of wearing a helmet. And that's why we specifically focus on minors. And I guess we focused on mopeds as opposed to mopeds and motorcycles because mopeds are kind of an up-and-coming form of transportation. People don't pay a lot of attention to them, and we thought that, or we still think, that it's important to pay attention to people who are riding mopeds, even though it's maybe a small amount now. It's growing and growing each year, and yeah, we just wanted to make sure that moped riders were safe.
You have not yet succeeded in getting this law passed in Iowa. Have you been surprised by the resistance that you've come up against?
Incredibly surprised. I did not imagine going into this that it would be so difficult to pass a safety law that can only have positive effects on the lives of our citizens, the citizens of Iowa, and on the economy, because it will save us money. To be honest with you, when some articles came out initially saying that we wanted to pass this helmet law, the comments on them were nerve-wracking. And as a 17-year-old, I didn't expect to have such a negative response. And those will always stick with me. And even though there are some people that are very against a helmet law, I know in my heart that it can only do good for our state.
In the year after Caroline died, her presence was everywhere at West High School. Her image, her name on T-shirts, songs played in her honor. And I'm struck by how so often when we lose someone, grief is a very personal, very private experience. During that year at West High, grief was a very public experience. And I'm sure there wasn't a day that went by that you weren't reminded of your friend's loss. When you think about that experience, how do you think that changed you to have really to think about Caroline every day?
Wow. That year at West High was a really difficult one, and it changed me in that I was able to refocus my priorities on what really mattered. While school is still important to me, it taught me the importance of family and friends, which is cheesy, and everyone says that, but I still try to live that up in my life, 4 years later. And being at West High while all of that was going down was in some ways very helpful, because I knew that I had a number of people within our student body that I could lean on and teachers that would help me if I was having a tough day. It was nice that the community knew, everyone knew what happened. But on another level, it was so incredibly difficult to walk through the hallways and think that I heard Caroline's voice in the stairwell, or walk past her locker, or go to a class that I'd had with her and expect to see her sitting across the room and not have her be there. So it was a year I will never forget for many reasons.
How often do you think about your friend these days?
Oh, every day. Every day. In different ways, but I'll never forget her.
We've talked a lot this hour about her legacy and her mother's legacy. When you think about what you've done with the helmet law and just how you live your life, how do you think you're carrying on Caroline's legacy?
I'd like to think that I'm carrying on her legacy through my everyday actions, through the little things, through asking people how they're doing, how their test went, and just by living life to its fullest and taking those risks that I might not normally, and loving everyone, even if we have different points of views or believe different things, loving everyone for who they are.
Leah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show.
Leah Murray was a close friend of Caroline Founds, who passed away in August of 2011. We were talking earlier about the book Live Like Line, Love Like Ellen, written by Bill Hoft, that has just been released. And Caroline Found is still being memorialized and remembered by many who loved her and knew her and many who didn't, with the phrase Live Like Line still appearing in many places around Iowa and around the country as well.
Where it began, I can't begin to knowing, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Hand, touching hands, reaching out.
This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Touching me.